Welcome to this week's Key Voices. I'm Eva Jozefkovic, bringing you a roundup of the latest education news and an interview with Ollie de Botton, head teacher of School 21 in Stratford. In the news this week, The Guardian has reported that the Metropolitan Police are planning to increase the number of officers working full-time in schools in London as concerns grow about a surge in knife crime. Deputy Assistant Commissioner Mark Simmons told an inquiry into knife crime that there were 420 police officers with full-time roles in schools in the capital. The TES has reported that parents in a number of towns and cities are being organised to spread protests against LGBT content in lessons. In recent weeks, a school in Birmingham has been at the centre of controversy over its No Outsiders programme of lessons, which teaches pupils about diversity and acceptance, with some parents holding demonstrations against these lessons. The Independent has reported that unauthorised pupil absences have soared to a record high thanks to parents taking children out of school for term time holidays, despite a sharp rise in the number of families hit with fines. More than one in six pupils, 17.6%, missed at least half a day of lessons in 2017-18 for a holiday. Also this week, Jeff Barton, the General Secretary of ASCL, has said that schools should let students use mobile phones in the classroom at certain times instead of banning them outright, to model how to use them in a productive way. Six unions, which form the School Cuts Coalition, have warned that schools face a funding shortfall of £5.4 billion despite extra funding to cover teacher pay rises. NAHT Secretary Paul Whiteman has warned that school budgets are at an absolute breaking point. And the head of the NASUWT, Chris Keats, has said that bad behaviour in classrooms is being fuelled by fashionable restorative justice schemes. She voiced her concerns that poor implementation of restorative policies can lead to teachers becoming disempowered and discipline getting worse. And now for our interview with Ollie de Botton. This week, we're speaking to Ollie de Botton, head teacher of School 21 in Stratford. Welcome, Ollie.
Hello.
Could you start off by telling us a little bit about your school and what you think makes it unique?
So, School 21 has a mission, which is to empower our young people to take on the world. And we think that's significant because it's not a vision necessarily about everyone going to university, although we would like that. But it's a vision giving children something that allows them to act on the world, to make a difference to themselves, their community and people around them. And we think that is different and significant. And there are some assumptions that sit underneath that. So we take really, really seriously the social as well as academic component that I think schools have always had. And we're very serious and think that's important. Another assumption is that we think simply asking children to replicate kind of the education of the past isn't going to help them in the future. So it's really great if children are brilliant at English and maths and history and languages, and that's fantastic, but we don't think that's sufficient to empower them. What that does is replicate the power structure or the power systems that there are today. And the other assumption is that because School 21 was founded as a pioneering school, we like to think we're a pioneering school, you know, we invited parents and students to come to our school where there was no teachers, no building, no track record. We felt like it was a pioneering thing to do. So we want our children to be pioneers as well. So we think that empowerment's a good word for us because it's not business as usual. It's a different type of mission and a different type of goal. And then if we take that as our mission, from that flows, I think, some interesting things about the curriculum. So we talk here about a curriculum of the head, the heart and the hand. So a curriculum of the head gives children some really important knowledge about subject disciplines because we think subject disciplines are important. There are access to truth in their own way. But it also gives them, we also want a curriculum of the heart. So it seems to me that in order to be empowered and act on the world, you kind of need to know who you are and what you're about and make good choices. So we take really seriously a kind of rich curriculum that's about them as people and helping them develop. And a curriculum of the hand is doing stuff and doing stuff now. So we have a fundamental belief that children, young people can do amazing things today, 11, 16 and 18. They don't have to wait to go to university or the future to act on the world and make an impact. So our curriculum of the hand are demands of children to work in projects, work in teams, to make a difference to their local community, to their school community or beyond. So that I think that, I don't know if that's unique, but that's kind of what we believe, and that's what we've been working at for 7 years, and I think probably for the next 7 years too.
Okay, great. And could you tell us a little bit more about what rebalancing the head, heart, and hand in the curriculum actually means in practice?
It's a good question, and people ask us that quite a bit. I mean, first of all, there's curriculum time for well-being and coaching, and that is, you know, traditionally more than you might see in a school for form time. And in that, in those coaching periods, children are really exploring topics in a dialogic way using oracy and getting opportunities to kind of talk out the issues that are happening in their world, and our teachers, our coaches get training on that. In relation to the curriculum of the hand, we spend about from the middle school upwards a day a week where they're working in projects, teachers collaborating across disciplines to get really good products and outcomes. So, you know, a kind of fifth of our learning time is given over to those projects. And the curriculum of the head is, as you might expect, we need to explore really, really rich subject domains. But we kind of insist that teachers are teaching from the big ideas as well as the sort of factual knowledge of subjects so that they can really stretch conceptual understanding as well as kind of factual knowledge. Because we think that when you're teaching subjects, what you need to be able to do is to get the kind of facts right. So if you take maths, for example, they need to have kind of fluency in number, but they need to be able to glimpse the skills and the concepts around problem solving. When we're studying history, we need to understand the chronology, but we also need to understand the biggest ideas, perhaps of causation that there are in history. So those are kind of practical ways that we're putting the head, heart and hand into practice, although we always want to do more.
I was having a look at your website earlier, and I saw that your school is known for putting oracy or speaking at the heart of its practice. Why do you think that this in particular is important for pupil development?
Well, I think first thing about oracy is it links the head, the heart and the hand in a funny sort of way. So if we take them in turn, oracy seems to be really, really crucial when children are articulating the biggest ideas of subjects. Because what happens is you find is when children get to A-level, I've just been looking at A-level essays, they get quite good at sort of regurgitating information, but they need to articulate their argument and they need to reason. And oracy is just such a fantastic tool for that, whether we're discussing in class and we're reasoning about issues, that really sets them up really well. In terms of oracy for the heart, that's about finding your voice. Everyone in our school has a voice, or I want them to have a voice. So what does that mean in practice? It means that they're in coaching circles, small groups where they discuss issues that are important to them, that assembly is a circle, not rows. And there's something about kind of voice, being voiceless to gaining a voice is something very empowering. That's where oracy comes in. And of course, oracy of the hand, if you like, that's the kind of sort of projects that we've done. So whether it was children at the local planning committee persuading the local authority to stop them building a concrete factory on the Olympic Park, or whether it was the symposium that children in or young people in year 12 did last year to try and bring together the local authority and local charities to tackle the kind of issue of homelessness in Stratford and East London, they're using oracy in all three of those to sort of bring our curriculum alive. More broadly, oracy, I mean, you know, employers are constantly telling us, we work with a lot of employers here, that, you know, it's all very well knowing a lot, but the way that you can collaborate, the way that you can speak and conduct yourself, having this conversation that I'm having you with now, is worth being good at. It really is. And it's worth practicing. And it would be an odd thing to think that if there's something that's worth being good at, that a school wouldn't have a place to teach it and support it.
I mean, that community involvement that you mentioned is incredible. And the fact that pupils are, you know, sort of clearly getting really hands-on involved in these initiatives is remarkable. Can you tell us a little bit more about the engagement with parents and how you feel you effectively kind of communicate and engage with them and get them involved in the pupils' learning?
Well, I think it's a good question. I think, you know, to be open, I think it's an area where the school needs to do more, because what you know, our first group of parents were sort of pioneers with us, so they felt as much part of the kind of new school as we did, and sort of, and you know, and that allowed it to feel a very strong community. I think what's happened as we've got kind of bigger is we're trying to work out, well, what are the ways where you can't quite have that personal touch that you had in the early days? Mm. How can we build a strong circle without and within? So some of the things that sort of have been effective are inviting, including helping parents shape some of the things that we do here. So our community choir, for example, is where parents, actually local community and children, all sing together, doing things together. Having our project, you know, having our exhibition where the projects all at the end of each term come into fruition and children displaying their work, inviting parents into that. Inviting parents to watch our Ignite speeches in year seven, where children do a 5 minutes no notes talk on a kind of topic of their passion. It's trying to get parents involved in the vision and mission of the school. Where I think it is interesting for us is in the primary school, because we're 4 to 18, we're also trying to open our classroom doors, have that sort of culture of openness. So you bring a parent to school week, inviting them in to be part of lessons and really showing that we are porous to the community, both the local community, but also the wider business community as well.
I think there's some really sort of practical tips there that I think other schools can adopt. So that's great. Thank you so much for that. And what would you say you were most proud of in terms of the school's achievements to date?
I always struggle with this one because, you know, you're living and breathing a school. You never really know if it's going well. And you sort of, you know, school leaders listening to this will know the kind of, we're all just one Ofsted inspection away from the sack. But, you know, the things I think I'm proud of, I'm proud that oracy seems to be important, not just for us anymore. So kind of our sister charity Voice 21 seems to be having quite a big impact in the sector. Schools are thinking, look, actually oracy can help me with my teaching, oracy can help me with the well-being of the children. That feels really important to me because I'm very passionate about the value of talk, and it's really amazing to see other people are too. I mean, the other thing that I'd say I'm proud of is when you see some of the things that sometimes get a bit of a bad press actually sort of working. So in the sector, you sometimes get the impression that unless you're teaching a very knowledge-rich curriculum all of the time, you're somehow in deficit. Some of the things that I see here and make me think that's actually not true. It's a balanced curriculum that matters, because if you're only doing the knowledge and you're not nourishing the heart and the hand, you get all sorts of odd quirks where a child can regurgitate facts but can't make an argument. You get all sorts of odd quirks where children can pass the GCSEs but can't make good choices. So I think I remain committed to a really balanced curriculum, and there's a sort of philosophical reason behind that, I think, really, which is education, it has to take seriously its role to help children live well as learn well. That it's for me, it's all that has always been the case, and has been, I think, is self-evident to me. So seeing that is remains important, it's the balance and the breadth that actually matters and helps the young people take the next steps, gives me some confidence.
Of course, I think that's a really important point there to sort of say that you're preparing your pupils for life, not just for passing exams or indeed even getting into university. So I do agree that that's incredibly important. So what's next for School 21?
Well, obviously, we hope Voice 21 will grow and kind of extend across the country. And it's great working with our network of schools as part of Big Education, collaborating and working together to kind of extend our impact.
That's amazing. I didn't realise that there were so many schools involved. Yeah. And presumably there are plans to grow that kind of network and to get more senior leaders involved?
Yeah, so I mean, you should definitely have Becky for another podcast. So, but I think that, and I'd be in favour of this, I mean, what's happening is you get, as far as I can see, you've got lots of kind of middle leaders working in the Voice 21 community, and that might get you the dialogic classroom. But we're here very interested in the dialogic school. So what is a talking school? And so that has implications, doesn't it, for leadership? So if you know, as a head teacher in this school, it's very, very difficult for me to have a senior management meeting without an ORSI protocol. And if the talk is loose, you know, it's not going to cut it. But that has a real kind of sense of, okay, well, that gets you purposeful talk. And if you've got purposeful talk at the top of an organization, the organization can function well. And just incidentally, it's not like we always have personal talk here, often the contrary, but you can see a way through to thinking that getting good talk at the top organization is a good thing. But the Dialogic School also has a view of sort of staff voice. So, you know, every student has a voice, every member of staff has a voice. So one of the things we're doing this year, so kind of more surveying of staff. I run a termly forum where we answer questions, we work through issues together. And broadly, it's a culture of we talk it out. So there are issues in the staff room, what we want to hear about, we want to talk them out. So a Dialogic School has talking at the heart of the classroom, but it also has talking at the heart of leadership. And I suppose the kind of the third point about the Dialogic School is it sees teacher development as happening in relation to rich conversation. So one of the things that people say here and teachers say is that they get a lot out of the kind of rich conversation about their subject, about pedagogy, about the students. And so one of the questions we ask teachers is kind of which conversations are radiating you today? Which ones are actually, and which ones are a drain? So are you having a really rich dialogue with people about your practice? And that kind of forces leadership to think, well, what meetings are people in? Who am I partnering together? Where's the opportunity for collaboration? So to take a step back, the kind of beautiful thing in my view about the ORSI agenda is it goes deeper and deeper. So that you can ORSI can be a frame through which you can do a lot of stuff within a school.
That's really fascinating, actually, the way that permeates through the different layers of the school, the staff as well as the pupils.
Well, we're trying to make it permeate. I have to say to the listeners, like, these are things that we're working on. I wouldn't say it's in any way complete or finished.
Of course, it's always a work in progress. And finally, our key question, which we always like to ask our guests, given what we've been talking about today, if you had one piece of advice for schools to act on, what would it be?
Well, I'm sure schools could give us advice. I suppose in a kind of non-judgmental way, I suppose my advice would be, I mean, there's a lot of talk about curriculum intention. That's the kind of Ofsted language. And I think that's potentially really liberating. But I suppose the advice is, what's the goal of the school? And then the curriculum intention is in service of that. So I strongly believe that the school is the unit of change. The school is where kind of amazing stuff happens. So if a school has a very clear vision of what it wants, the curriculum intention is easy because the curriculum intention is in service of what the school wants. And it's non-judgmental. Schools have different visions. But that feels to me like a good way of thinking about all the things that, you know, in a way Ofsted are asking of us now. What is your curriculum intention? You know, our curriculum intention springs from a view that children and adults, in fact, deserve agency, deserve empowerment, and that requires a rich curriculum that helps them get there.
Amazing. Thank you so, so much for speaking to us today. A lot of very, very useful points. Key Voices is produced by The Key, giving education leaders the knowledge to act. Special thanks to Ollie de Botton for talking to us today. Members of The Key for School Leaders can access hundreds of articles on the latest issues in education at thekeysupport.com.